Amen. Can you hear me? Is this thing on? Appears to be on. It working? Yeah, I called one of you yesterday, but I didn't tell you where I was when I was calling. I think at that particular time we were in Rhinebeck at the orthopedist. It was Kingston where I called from. That's right. I'm getting a different mixed up. I think I said to my wife late on Friday night, I said, I think this is the third time we've been in this particular room in the ER in this year, you know. And my wife was thrilled that it didn't, at least the reason we arrived there had nothing to do with kidneys. It's always interesting, but it's been an interesting couple of days. And she couldn't do that when we got here. I've got a couple of things. We have a guest speaker today, actually. I'm going to try not to take too much time. That would be Sylvie. Have you all met her? I do want to, there's just a couple of things. I have a messianic moment, which I don't think will take too long, but I don't base what I believe on my experiences, but I do believe experiences come out of who we know and what we believe. And it's one thing to seek experiences. It's another thing to distrust and actually resist experiences. And I just want to say, I think that the powers and principalities that squish down on the Hudson Valley that want to flatten us out are very real. They're not quite the same ones that are over, you know, Warren, Minnesota, where I grew up, or Sacramento that I lived in for a while. It's unique, but there's there's resistance everywhere in the world. But the resistance that's in the world has no actual power to stand against the Lord that we serve. And it can't stop us in him. But sometimes it succeeds in getting us to be tired and accept being tired and to be mentally and spiritually fatigued and to just call that the cares of this present world, which are the way it is. But, you know, the thing is, God doesn't describe us that way in his word. And I'm not saying we shouldn't get tired. I'm saying that discouraging circumstances and tiring things, whether just physical work or emotional things or, you know, troubling events, yeah, they affect us. The Lord doesn't even ask us to be unaffected. But we shouldn't accept those things as the defined limits of what God can do. I think they're actually opportunities to get to know the Lord a little better and see him work in different ways. But there are times where there's God's power is always there. It's always real. But there are times when it's present in a different way than others. And, you know, one place Yeshua went, that it says that the Spirit was present to, I can't quote it perfectly, but the thing is, it made it clear there are times and places where the Spirit's there, ready to move, and there's power released. And then there were places he went where he didn't, and you could say couldn't, but it's probably not the right word, do many mighty works because of, they didn't believe. It was in darkness, and they were, I think, accepting darkness in those places. But I will just say this, and do whatever you want with it. There was power up here. There was power in the room. There was power. The power of the Spirit was here, and working. And I have enough personal experience to never put confidence in my own thoughts or assessment, but at the same time, I have enough personal experience to tell myself, this is not your imagination. This is God's presence. And so what I'm saying is that the Lord was present up here, and there are times when if you feel particular prompting, like sometimes it could almost seem like a compulsion, you might be unsure of yourself, you might resist it. Not every compulsion we have is from God, but sometimes it's God just trying to shift us into gear, and we can just let him shift us into gear. It's not been my lifelong habit to go around shouting freedom. Most of my life, I never shouted that word ever. There was a time, though, two-thirds of my life ago, where I shouted it quite a lot. And the Lord was present in those times doing something both in me and in people around me. I don't mean it was all through me. I mean, there were people. The Lord was working. He was using a whole lot of people, and he was doing things in a lot of people. And we've been given freedom. We are meant to be walking in it. And freedom is defined by being released to do what God has given us to do. And, you know, then doing it. Sometimes that's shouting something. Sometimes it's praying silently. Not terribly unusual that it's something that we feel a little hesitant to do and maybe actually don't want to do. In those times, if you push yourself past that thing, the Lord usually opens up something in you. You take hold of a little more of your freedom. It's a little bit like taking a few more feet of the promised land in a symbolic or, you know, spiritual sense. And sometimes other people get set free when you did the thing that you were afraid would make you look stupid. You know what? It doesn't matter if somebody thinks you look stupid. At any rate, I just... you know, Lord, help our unbelief. We believe. Help anything that has anything to do with unbelief in us. You didn't come to condemn us for not having absolute perfection in everything. He came to teach us to walk in what he's given us. And he's doing that, so we should continue. And by the way, your prayers, God hears your prayers, not just other people's prayers. And if you hear a voice saying, well, I shouldn't be the one that prays for that person, I'm just telling you that's not from God. He's not a respecter of persons. He does use persons to set other people free, to bring healing, to bring light and revelation. And revelation oftentimes is just an old truth that somebody never saw. They might have read it 1,000 times, and then you come up and say something that you think sounds stupid, and the lights go on. And you don't always even know it. Sometimes you find out later. Some things you'll find out in the age to come. So let's believe what we believe and act on it. Now for the... I was going to mention too, you know, sometimes it can be hard to see, and sometimes seeing better can be harder than seeing not as well. And I've got these new glasses. See, I can actually see everybody's face in here now. You're a little too close, but it's not bad. Pretty good. I can see everybody's face again. You've been not just dots, you know, but not so clear, because my absolutely unbelievably excellent eyes began to change when I was about 45 or 46, which is kind of old, actually, for some of those changes to start. And gradually, you know, certain things at certain distances just aren't so clear. But I'm finding... Are you trying to get me to stop? I don't know what this means. Oh, hello. And you're saying hello now because... Oh, okay. Sorry, hello. What? So, there are certain times during the day. I'm actually reminding myself, put those things on and see through them. But I don't like everything about it. I'm probably getting used to them, and they do have reading on the bottom, and you know, I'm trying to get used to that. And I'm pretty incorrigible, actually. I'm pretty resistant to a lot of new things. I just like to do things my way, in case you never realized that. And my way sometimes it doesn't work, but I still want to do that. So if maybe that's just worth saying, because you're not alone, okay? But the Lord's trying to help us all grow up. And so don't feel bad if you don't feel fully grown up. I'm 60, and I don't feel like I've gotten there. But I am definitely better than when I was born in terms of that. And it's a lot better than when I was 19. Way, way better than that. And I'll leave it off with how different each age was now. So this is from, I really want to just switch to these other glasses. This is from Magid Devarav Ala Yaakov, Likutei Amarim number 1. Noah might know what that means. Jerusha might. Anyway, so this is what it says. This is obviously a translation. Our sages teach us that Israel was the first thing that arose in thought. Now, if that's not clear, that would be when there was nothing, there was God, and we all, I think, believe God thinks. That's the first thing he thought of. I'm taking it as in terms of deciding to create, not that he had no thoughts before that. Okay? Our sages teach us that Israel was the first thing that arose in thought. The very first thought was that Israel should come into existence, giving rise to righteous individuals in every generation. It was to make this possible that God constricted his splendor. That sound funny? This is like a father who constricts his intellect and speaks childishly to his young son. The father devises these childish ways and traits in order that the child should enjoy them. These childish ways also delight the father, and he is proud when his child partakes in them. This reminds me a little bit of Paul talking about Messiah being foolishness, and that he's like happy to lose everything and be a fool. reminds me a little bit of that. For God, past and future are exactly the same. He delighted in the deeds of the righteous in the far distant future. This reminds me of Don Rummel being here one time. I wasn't here, but I found out later that he said, God can say, had a good time with you tomorrow, Rumble. See, we can't speak that way, but God can. It's funny to me that Don Rummel actually agrees with the rabbis on something. He may not know. I think I'm going to call him and tell him tomorrow. I like Don, by the way. I like him very much. I wasn't putting him down. So, for God, past and future are exactly the same. He delighted in the deeds of the righteous in the far distant future, and therefore constricted his essence. The constriction, tsimtsum, was a result of God's love for the sake of Israel. So, just to not only give you something from the rabbis, who I want you to be interested in, but not take as God's mouth by any means. It says this in Philippians chapter 2. I hope this is the same Philippians I was looking at earlier. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Messiah Yeshua, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Yeshua, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Yeshua, the Messiah, is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So, constricted might not be the word I would have chosen, but Yeshua is one with the Father and the Spirit. Father, Spirit, Son, they're one. Came in the form of a man, a Jewish man, Yeshua the Jew, I am fond of calling him, because the world has a way of sort of forgetting that that's what he was, or redefining it in some spiritualized sense. He was a Jew. He came as a man who was a Jew, born of a woman, limited himself, humbled himself. And he did do that for the sake of Israel, and he and the Father, who are one, did it for the sake of all humanity, through his choosing of Israel. And by the way, the rabbis of old believed that what God was after wasn't to just make Israel this marvelous thing for Israel's sake, but to create one new humanity through his choosing of Israel. So that's the messianic more than a moment for this week. And now I'm going to ask my daughter Sylvie to come. Some of you don't know, she was just recently in Belarus. God brought her there, and from there I'll just let her tell you all about it. You want this?
Nope. Hi, I'm back. This time for the foreseeable future, but I'm not guaranteeing forever. Maybe I can just set it down. That is pretty much everybody in the camp. On the last day, they always do a people picture with the t-shirts. So this is the t-shirt. Can you go to the next slide now, please? Okay, so I'm kind of wrapping in my thank yous for both supporting me in my semester in Russia and for camp, because being in Russia for my 4.2 months really enabled me to do a lot of things when I was at camp in Belarus, and made it much easier for me to talk with people and interact with them and be more involved and less on the outside as an American. I don't know what the next picture is, but I think you can go to it. Oh, that was their logo for this time. The theme of the 10-day camp was a journey through the history of Israel or the Jewish people. So each day, basically, we were in a different place and time. So we started with Abraham and Sarah, and then I think Egypt and Roman times, and then shtetls, and they made their own Holocaust museum in one of the buildings to bring the kids to, and then Israeli War for Independence and the modern state of Israel. So every day had a lesson with the theme. There was something that I thought of, and now I don't know what it was. I think I'll go over the basic things and then go into the stuff that's more serious. Also, I was there for a couple of days before we went to the camp site that has these old barracks and fields and swings, and it's actually by a farm, and the people who work there all grow all the food, or not all of it, but a lot of it, the bread and vegetables. But before that, we were in Minsk. The camp was near Brest, which is all the way on the by the western border of Belarus. But I was in Minsk for a couple of days, staying with a woman and her daughter who are part of their congregation there. And we went and visited a Holocaust survivor whose father was a partisan, and they escaped from the Minsk ghetto. And then the woman I was staying with took me and Stuart's new assistant, Jesse, who's from the States but has lived all over. We walked around the territory that was part of the ghetto and went to Yama, which means the pit, which is where a lot of Jews were killed and or buried. And there's this natural pit there. It was impactful standing there on top of that with it paved over. And there's there are statues of people going down, and then there's a memorial statue. It was the first memorial in the Soviet Union that acknowledged the fact that it was Jews who died and not Soviet citizens. And then the people who put it up were then arrested and I think killed, and the monument was taken down. But now there's a new one, and it has it in Hebrew, and now I can't remember if it was Belarusian or Russian. So it's there again now, and that's a really interesting history. And then there is another memorial in the territory of the ghetto by the original Jewish cemetery. So that was something I got to do before camp started, and then we went to the camp facility. Okay, Craig. The top photo is me with my group of girls, and The young lady on the right side of the photo is Nana. She was the madrich, so like the equivalent of the counselor, and I was her helper. And she was from Ukraine and came with also another friend to serve at the camp. We had 9 girls. We were supposed to have 5 to 8 girls, but ended up with 9. 8 to 9 years old, except the last one was accidentally added to our group, and she was 6. And she was supposed to be with the little kids, that who are the kids of the camp workers. So they have little kids, kids, and then teens. But it worked out nicely. So we had, this was funny, we had a set of twins, Anna and Yana, and then 2 Sonias and 2 Lizas, and then Lyuba, Eliana, and Emilia. So it took me a little bit to get people straight, and nobody ever gets the twins straight, and there's another pair of twins at camp who are little ones, and so there was a lot of guessing people's names, and then I was like, you know what? I can ask the one I'm talking to, hey, what's your sister's name? And then I'll know her name. So, but I think they're used to it, because nobody can tell them apart, really, unless they've known them for a long time and look carefully at their eye color. And then at the bottom photo, the little girl is one of the Lizas. She's a 6-year-old, and she's in my madrich's lap. And then the guy playing with her is Ilya, and he was a madrich for one of the boys' groups in the little kids' camp. Okay, next. So all the groups, at least the little kids' camp, come up with a name for the group and some sort of presentation slogan as part of the fun and getting people together. So our group had bright yellow hats. The little kids all get hats. Our group was the only one that basically didn't wear them most of the time. I don't know why. But they named our group, or we named our group Limonchiki, which is like little lemons. Instead of limon, limonchik, limonchiki, little lemons. And our slogan, which is in Russian, is Limonchiki super, limonchik klas, gospod rядом с нами всегда и сейчас. So, limonchiks are super, limonchiks are cool, God is near with us, forever and now. So that was our little slogan, and it worked nicely. Next. Those are photos that I got off of Reach Initiative International's Facebook page. They're the organization that Stuart and Chantal have, that has different things around the world. So there's one of the other kids' groups in the red hats, a game that involved finding letters in Bible verses, another group, some kids, me leading my group on a game while Nana hid somewhere. We were all holding onto a piece of string trying not to fall over and have everybody cry. Spent a lot of time trying to get people not to cry. And then a friend of a friend. Okay. This is the Exodus. We walked out towards the fields, which were beautiful. Belarus is covered in fields all over. It's really flat, like a lot of Europe, but I haven't really been many flat places in my life, so I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful, and you can see. Which is the same thing that happened in Poland, except this had even more fields instead of trees and stuff. That the man in the foreground is Roma, one of the like senior leading type people in their congregation, dressed as Moses. Jesse took that picture, and then we have an Egyptian who came along for the trip. That was really great, and we were all walking around and then came around, and some of the kids were like, we're coming right back where we started. We're like, no, it's not the same place anymore. It's a different place. We're not in Egypt anymore with the slave drivers. And they had people acting the whole time, like, with fake whips and costumes and decor and stuff. Came around to a bonfire, and then we did our singing and stuff there and gave people goodies before we disbanded for the night. Next. That's one of the services. I got to sing with the worship team a few times because I can read Russian and I can understand pretty much all of the stuff they were singing. And the girl at the keyboard, it was actually one of the campers in the teens camp who's older, but got recruited to do worship stuff because Yulia Klimenkova hurt her arm and couldn't really play, and then got something with her voice and couldn't sing either. So I was like, you know, I could help if you want it. And they're like, okay, sure. And then they're like, yeah, let's get everybody. So they were recruiting basically anybody who could sing and wanted to do it. So that was nice. And one of the girls in my group was like, how can you sing in Russian? I'm like, well, it's like talking in it, but you're singing. But she was just like, how is that possible? And we told them in our group the first day that I'm an American, I might not understand everything. And then, I don't remember what day it was now. I wrote it down somewhere. One second. The fourth day of camp, I come to check on two girls who got hurt and then just decided to stay in the room instead of coming back, which they're not supposed to do. And they were talking on one of their beds when I came in. I was like, hello. And they said, we didn't realize you weren't from Belarus. But then we realized it. And they're like, we told you at the beginning. And they're like, we noticed a few things about the way you talk and like you switch your E and eh sometimes or something. But it was so funny because the day before, one of the girls got really upset. She was having trouble. She's kind of hyper and needs a lot and wants things particular ways, which there's nothing wrong with, but it's just harder for her to emotionally handle some things. And she kept saying that she hated this one other girl who was actually the one she most liked to play with. And that nobody wanted to play with her. And I was watching this because I would be like, okay, you just played with them. And then you get upset. And then they literally ask you to play with them. And you say no. So then you don't play with them. So I sat down with her and basically told her all of that. I was like, I have a lot of friends. You have a lot of friends. She's like, but you have more friends. I'm like, no, I don't. They're all your friends. They want to play with you. You've been playing with them. I was like, that's just not true. And when I sat down with her, I said, okay, first, forgive me, because Russian is not my native language. And she goes like this. And I told that to Roma one of the other days, and she's like, what, did you not realize that you're an American? And I thought she knew that, but then the next day when she said that, I was like, okay, that might explain the face that she made. Because I was like, what do they think, that I'm just really quiet because I don't talk most of the time? Because I can understand pretty much everything going on around me, but couldn't necessarily produce my own stuff. And what was also cool is I got to help some of the English speakers with translating basic stuff. It was really cool how much I could understand. Not everything. And then Nadia, who is married to Pasha, and they do youth ministry in the congregation, she was running all the games and stuff. And then Jesse was taking pictures and they also had a photographer, and Nadia would come over and be like, okay, can you tell Jesse to take pictures of this, this, and this, and this? And then I would kind of try to say it back to her and ask a couple questions to make sure, and then I would tell him, and she would be like, good. So I was like, yeah, I can actually understand stuff. So Jesse was from the U.S. John and Christy came partway through camp. They came last year, too. CJ is also from the U.S., but has lived in Moscow for 12 years teaching English, but seems to not understand more than I do, especially not in writing, which was surprising for me. So I couldn't really translate stuff most of the time, but I could get little bits and pieces and tell them basically what was happening. And so that was cool. What's the next picture? Oh, that one's a verse. Okay, back up for a second. Thanks. Before I went to camp, I was having a really hard time. I don't know if it started while I was still in Russia before I came back, or if it was after I came back that it was mostly bad. But struggling with emotional stuff and just feeling really out of it. And when I got there, it was also hard. And when I was in Minsk, I tried to not be, like, really a downer when I was staying with people, but I also wasn't exactly lively. And then we went to the camp facility. We had 2 days to set up and do preparation and meet with each other. And on, what day was it? Sunday, I think, I got the message through Jesse that Zipporah had been born, and I saw the names that you picked and started crying and went outside, and Chantal came out and found me and talked to me, and I didn't tell her, like, exactly what triggered it, but I told her, basically, I've been having a really hard time, and, like, this is hard. And she prayed for me, and I went back in. And then that night, after one of our meetings, this was still before the kids came, I found myself around Roma with a chance to talk to him, and they're really great, and I made really good friends with them and some of the other people in 2016 when I went. The kind of friends, it's like you come back and it's basically like nothing changed. Like, he started making jokes about stuff immediately. He said he only does that with people that feel close, which is nice. So this started with, I had the iPhone that I took to Russia that the screen broke on, all wrapped in tape, and he was like, oh, nice phone case. And then we started talking, and he said, why did you come? And I was like, well, when I came last time, I always wanted to come back, and this summer I wasn't working because I'm taking a break. And then started talking about how nervous I was feeling and how I'd been having a hard time, and now that I was there, I was like, okay, why am I here now? I know I was excited before, but now I have no idea what I'm doing here. And he started talking to me about spending time in God's presence and all the benefits of that, and hearing him, and also not just like asking for things or talking at God, but things like, hey God, what did you think today about this? And like stuff like that. And I can't remember all of it. And I just sat and listened, and I still had all those thoughts, but I just let myself listen. And I think one thing in Russia that seems to have changed is I can listen a lot more, even when there's other stuff going on in my head. And I'm trying to show you all that, but I do fail, so please have patience with me. So I listened. We talked about it. It was really good. I hadn't been reading my Bible enough or really taking enough time to just be away from everything else. So he talked to me about that. I was like, that's something that you need to do. So I think it was the next day. He was like, it might not be every day. It might not be half an hour. It could be like 15 minutes. Try to do that. I don't know if it was that day. I was like, this is something you need to do for a long time before you can really see if it works. So I think it was the next day I managed to get a whole half an hour in the morning. And I tend to feel nervous around people in general, as in human beings, and feel like I'm not supposed to be where I am constantly, or I'm doing something wrong constantly, or someone thinks something bad, even just sitting somewhere or talking or doing something I'm supposed to be doing. But after that 30 minutes in this little sort of tree platform by the fire hole pond, I came down and I was so much more relaxed. And one of the things I think I had prayed about then, well, first of all, I thanked God for a lot of things. And I just looked at how beautiful everything was. I picked that spot because it really was beautiful, and I kind of concentrate better when I'm by water. And I was just like, yeah, this world is really beautiful. Thank you, God, for all of this. And I was feeling really insecure and didn't know what to say, and I did it, and then I came down, and I was like, oh, I forgot what I said. One of the things was that I'd live for God's eyes and not for other people's eyes, because if what I'm doing in God's eyes is good, then it will be good, regardless of what other people think, if they see it or not. And when I got down and then went to go meet the kids, or maybe it was before the kids came, but there were other times when the kids came. But I came down and I walked around and I realized that I wasn't constantly doing that like counter-espionage thing, like looking around and being like, okay, who's there? And feeling really bad. Like, I didn't, it was really cool. And then I was still struggling. On Monday, the first, it was the first day of camp, the kids came. We were all in our costumes, pretending to be back in the times of Abraham and Sarah. And they came to little tiny tents that we made with posts and sheets of fabric, and gave them cheese, juice, and I think it's called lavash. Can't remember. It's like this red stuff. The second morning when I tried to have the time with God, I was like, okay, so yesterday was really great. I have no idea what to do today. And I'm like, it would be really weird to just say everything 100% over again. And I'm really selfish, and I don't know how to not be selfish, and how to actually, you know, have the two-sided conversation that Roma was talking about. And there was a devotional that some of us have been doing, 30 Days of Gratitude, and I happened to read one that had Isaiah 54:17. I think that's on the next slide, Craig. Yeah. So most of us are very familiar with the first part, no weapon formed against you will prosper. I was not familiar with the next part. No weapon formed against you will prosper, and you will condemn every tongue that rises against you in judgment. This is the heritage of Adonai's servants. Their vindication is from me. It is a declaration of Adonai. So all of those voices or messages and things, whether it's inside your head, your mind, or coming from other people, it's like, no. No, that's not true. That isn't for me. That's not what God wants me to hear. And even if it's your own self, you don't have to do that. And I told Chantal about that because I was trying to be like, if there's anything I hear, if there's anything that happens, I need to tell someone about it. Partly because when you tell something like that in truth, it works differently than if you just keep it inside a lot of the times. And also, I can make myself doubt a lot of experiences I've had. So if somebody else knows about it, then I know they know about it, even if I don't know about it. So that was really good. And I'd been feeling like, I don't know what to do at this camp. I feel really useless. Am I just an extra person? I can't have super in-depth conversations with any of the kids. I can do basic things like ask where they're going, tell them what we're doing now, like help them when they get hurt, try to discuss things if they start crying or fighting with each other, but not really serious conversations. And I didn't really do much of that. If something was really serious, I found someone else who could come talk with them. Except for our nightly timeout, if I wanted to say something, then Lena, who speaks English, would translate for me from English. But most of the time we were just in Russian and I could understand almost everything she said, but then sometimes I'd answer in English, but like basically it was mostly Russian. And then, you know, different things like that one girl getting upset and me talking with her and being able to help with things. Then at our morning staff meeting on the fourth day, I decided to share, because they have everybody share, like, did something happen with the kids, with you? Are there things we need to address? We'd meet, and then Stuart would give a little drash and pray, do the Shema. And I said, I decided to go for English because I was like, you know what? I'm not trying to show off. I'm just trying to say something. This will be easier. I'll have someone, I think Roma, translate it for me. I told them how I was feeling scared when I got there and felt useless, but then I realized that I was being helpful and that there are no extra people there. Like no excess people, everyone there has something to do. And one of the things I was thinking about is if someone can do something on their own, or if you can accomplish something on your own, that does not make it the best, most enjoyable, most productive way to do it. It's not all about that kind of economy of how can I do this without involving other people. And I had talked to Roma about that, and he kind of checked in on me throughout the camp, which was good. And I told him stuff, and he's like, oh, see, you were useful today, huh? Somebody noticed you existed today, huh? And then, so I got past that, okay, I'm useful. And then I was like, but I don't want to need to be useful. So then I talked to him about that. And I was like, my identity cannot be pinned on. I'm being useful. So then, okay, so you're making progress. Next step. So like, yeah, I think I got past that a lot over the next half of camp. The fourth day, when I talked with Roma about a lot of that, he assigned me, and about not knowing, you know, how to keep spending time with God, because the first time was good, and then after that, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I think there's another scripture that is relevant to this on the next slide. Okay, one of them was part of Philippians 4. I've decided to read a little more of it. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all people. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Messiah Yeshua. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any virtue and if there is anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, put these things into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. What's the next one? I think I need to look this one up. I didn't have time. The battery on this is starting to go. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. And Roma assigned me those two passages to not just read, but dwell on. And then I had assignment to come tell him what came of that. But also he had me put my name in for like the world part and for the whoever part. So for God so loved Sylvie that he gave his only Son, that Sylvie who believes in him should not perish but have eternal life, and like that. And then the next time I talked to him about it, I talked to him not every day, but sometimes a couple times a day, and sometimes went 2 days without really interacting at all because we're all busy taking care of kids and services and food and all sorts of stuff. So what I got from that was, okay, so yeah, also he said part of this to me, I'm selfish, God knows that, that's not news. But I got from this is that he's not going to punish me for trying to spend time with him, even if I don't know what to say. And yeah, I'm not going to be doing it perfectly, but I can still do it. And also with the Philippians part, it goes back to the Isaiah passage with every voice that condemns you, you shall judge. So the counterpart to that is to dwell on all the things that you do know are good and true. And then also, I really like being around kids. And the more I'm around kids, I always like, okay, yes, I definitely want to have kids. And both Roma and Chantal said, well, that's good, because a lot of people have the opposite reaction. But it's true. And they also learn a lot from being around them. Like, they need comforting a lot. There isn't a day that goes by that one or more of them cried several times and needed a hug or needed a little guidance. Like, no, really, let's do this other thing. Or, that's not true. Or stuff like that. And we're all children, and we need comforting, and we need fun, too. Like, part of the camp is really just to give those kids a good summer. And there were kids from an orphanage in Mogilev, I think, and kids from their congregation, and then maybe some other kids who weren't from either place. And it's like there are the focused spiritual things, there's life in general, there's the fun, there's the friendship, and I have a lot of friends there, and it was really nice for me to see. And all of that is part of life, not just services or just food or just fun or just all those other things, but all of those things are part of life. And that's one of the reasons, like, really thank you for helping me go, because also I didn't go to the Tikkun conferences this year because I was in Russia when they happened, so I didn't have that normal thing that I've had every other year of my life, like after school ends and stuff, to just soak for a while. There was one time when I had a little bit of a break, I went to the teens mincha, like prayer worship service, towards the end. I actually was going to go take a nap. One of the things they said at the beginning was, if you're tired, read the word. Because they're like, people get tired throughout the course of camp, not getting enough sleep, working all day. But I heard the music coming out of the main hall, and I decided to go there. And I was thinking about this, you know, why am I here? And I was like, you know, well, because I'm thirsting for God. And I think that was before the worship team then started singing, Ya zhajdu tebya, which means I thirst for you. And then I was like, you know, like, I want to know that you're here and, like, move us with your spirit. And I started feeling something kind of tingly, like pins and needles, but not exactly, in little waves. And I was like, okay, that's not normal. That's not, I mean, sometimes I have pins and needles, but this is not the typical thing, and it's not cold. That happened today during the prayer time, and that's part of why I came over here, because that is not a normal feeling that I have. Like, whatever exactly how that works, I mean, people can get tingles when they hear really good singing or see certain things or have certain experiences, so why can't God also cause that? If other things can cause it. And I told my girls about that, not that day, but the next day, and Nana translated for me at our, like, nightly timeout. Then comes day 6, Saturday, Shabbat. I was so tense. And I went to Chantal and told her, I am so tense. Can you pray for me? And she prayed for me, and it wasn't, like, immediately went away, but I was like, okay, I'll just keep going, keep doing all the things that people have been telling me, hold on to things. And then that was, I think, the first day that I kind of got up the courage to go say, hey, if you want me to sing with you, I can do that, because Chantal had said something about it, but I hadn't really jumped on it. But after that, one of the things I went to, I really felt like that was something that would be nice and good to do, and it was. Then I started feeling kind of sick. The food at the camp is really not stuff you want to eat for a week. Like, lots of oily pasta, soup, potatoes. So I started eating a lot of rice cakes, yogurt, and my protein bars for the next few days. Woohoo. Which is kind of funny, because the first time I went to the camp, I ended up living off of yogurt and bananas for a few days. And then, I don't know what the next slide is. Can you show me? Okay, not yet. I know what time it is. A lot of what I was talking about with Roma, he was saying, like, comes down to a spirit of rejection. Like, the things that I was describing earlier with not being legitimate in any sense, really. And some of the girls in our group this one night, I guess they do this all the time, even the 8 and 9 year olds started talking about guys at the camp. And, like, which ones they thought were cute, and then a couple of the madriks, and, like, talking to the other girl about, oh, she introduced me to this other person, and I'm like, you're, like, 8 years old. What? And I said, I'm like, I'm 21, girls. Like, hold on. Hold on. And then I was talking to Nadia and Pasha, who are really dear to me, and they don't know any English, but I was really close to Nadia when I went in 2016, even though we couldn't really talk at all of it, other than a couple of words. And something came up with some of the other kids, and then I told them about what happened with the girls, and then Nadia asked me if they had matched me with anyone, because apparently they like to do that. And it took a few times around and looking up one word in the dictionary until I finally, like, figured out what she was saying. And then I was like, no. And then she asked me if I liked any of the other Madriques. And then one of them in particular. And so the thing is, the answer wasn't no, but I didn't answer it. I was just kind of like, oh, seriously. And then they were like, oh, yeah. I was, like, leaning on Nadja, like, covering my face. I'm like, why would you ask that? Why would you ask that? You're an adult. Why are you asking that? So we actually talked about it for a while. And she kept saying, oh, it was a joke. And then continued to talk about it. And there's this Russian saying that, like, every joke has a dose of truth in it. And I didn't know it in Russian. I only knew the English translation, so I did, like, a reverse translate into Russian in my head. And they were like, oh, does anybody know an English saying? Because she knows a Russian one. That's cool. And then Pasha was talking. I'm like, look, I'm not trying to have anything happen. And then Pasha's like, but you need your eyes and ears open. And I was like, but you also need to be careful. And he said, yes, you need to be careful too. And then I was like, I'm going to feel so embarrassed for the rest of this, even though nothing is happening at all. It's just sometimes people like each other. It happens a lot. It happens more than people ever talk about. And I was like, I don't know if I should talk to Roma about this or not. Would that be weird? And then I went for a while. And then actually the next morning, a friend I met in 2016, his dad was meeting with Roma talking about something, and it was near my room in one of the barracks places. And all of a sudden I'm walking by, and his dad, my friend's dad, not who wasn't one of the Madriques, is like, are you married? This was in Russian. And I'm like, no. And he's like, he said, how old are you? And said, 21. Are you married? No. And it was like, Roma was kind of interjecting too, going back and forth. It was pretty funny. And he was like, well, married to Yeshua? And I was like, yeah, sure. I'm trying to remember things, and it also wasn't in English. Something like, yes. And then going back and forth, and it was David's dad. So David's dad is like, okay, so when? I was like, like, any time. And then they thought that was really funny, go back and forth a few times, and then I finally left because I actually needed to go somewhere. But then after that, I was like, seriously? Like, the morning after that. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to talk to him about it because I don't want to be really tense the rest of the time. I don't know how to deal with this. So I talked to Roma later that day. Half of the Madriques were going to this water park. We had taken the kids before, but then it was our turn to just go by ourselves to take a break. But then the other half would be left. So I left Liana with the group. And we actually set a time to talk, and it didn't happen because something important came up. And I was like, okay, I'm just waiting. This might have to happen another time. And then lunch happened, but he was too busy during lunch. And then we had like 5 minutes before a bus was supposed to leave, but it got pushed a little bit. So we were just talking out in the parking lot. I told him all this stuff about getting really embarrassed, and then David's dad and stuff. And he was like, okay, so what's the matter? And I like teared up, and he said, why are you upset? I said, I don't know. And he was talking to me about like, this happens. This is part of human social interaction. It's good. It's fine. So then we went, and I spent the 2 hours at the aqua park with people asking me why I wasn't smiling, which I really hate. Please don't do that to me, like, pretty much ever. And I was like, you know, well, I don't have particularly bad spirits, like mood, but then one of the other madriks who's older was like, but they're not good. I was like, yeah, they're not great. But I was trying to like relax, sort of enjoy it, not get too down wherever it was. And then we came back. I stopped by the teens mincha again because I wasn't completely needed. Like, there were certain times when we didn't have to do as much with the kids. And it hit me when I was there why I got so upset. And I couldn't, it's hard for me to phrase in words because it's kind of more of a feeling thing. But in passing, I told Roma, you know, I think I know why I got upset. I was like, okay, good, we'll talk later. So we actually talked at dinner this time. And I sort of kind of put it into words. And then he amazingly, completely understood. And then basically said it all back to me, filling in the gaps, which was, it was like, yes, yay. Because even sometimes when I was talking to him, for some reason in English, I felt more shy. I didn't really talk to him in Russian the whole time at all. But I'd go from Russian and then start speaking English, and then he couldn't understand me. So that was really nice that he totally understood everything I was saying. So also, if you have the spirit of God, you can understand certain things, which is basically that getting married is something I've wanted for quite a long time, like not at a particular time, but in general. And there have been a few situations with certain people where it's been like really close to the kind of thing you'd think of that would lead to that. And I started telling him, you know, like, if it's not the right time and it's not the right person, that doesn't mean you're being rejected. And I couldn't really get the rest of it into words, but he said all of basically everything that was on my mind back to me. Is like, yes, this is the same thing with spirit of rejection. When the people asked you all those questions, when David's dad asked you those questions, it pushed those buttons. Like, I didn't have a problem with being asked. I'm not one of those people who's like, stop asking everybody. It's a really cultural thing in that area of the world. Young women are like, okay, when are you getting married? I really don't have a problem with that in general, but it just really hit me at the moment. And so I was crying so hard at the table where all the like senior leadership people were sitting in the cafeteria dining room, at the end of the table, just crying, because I was like, yeah, God showed me what on earth was going on when I came back and went to the end of the teens service. So I was really glad that I talked to Roma, even though I wasn't sure if it was the greatest idea, because I wouldn't have had the question of why am I so upset, and then had that break, and then come back and been hit with that. I think there was more to that, but I mean, also one of the things Chantal said was that in you being comforted, you can comfort other people. So a lot of that was for me, and maybe I can't tell all of it, and maybe I don't need to, but I hope that what I was/am able to communicate will do that. That was really good. And after that conversation and crying really hard, I felt way better. Like, that day, I had been kind of just really tired. About halfway through camp, everybody starts to be like, okay, why are we so tired? Because we're getting, like, 5 to 6 hours of sleep every night and then corralling kids around all day. So that was really good. That was day 8. And then day 9 was shtetl day, so I was in a costume. I won't be much longer. Roma told me, we had been talking about this, that I needed someone, a partner, to encourage me and also be sort of an accountability partner for me working on the things we had discussed throughout camp. And he told me, like, by this day, you need to tell me what you're going to do when you get home. That meant a lot to me because, you know, they'd been talking about, you know, with, especially with the teens, you don't want to be like, okay, oh, we love you, camp's over, and you never have any contact again, and everything you've done with them is just over, that there needs to be support after that. And he was making sure that I, one of the workers, would have support for after camp, and that really meant a lot, and he wants to hear from me. I have contact through his wife, Alessia, and it's not, like, I really value this relationship that started last time I went, but I wasn't in that much contact with them after that. And they're the kind of people that are so, like, they have so much life that they give to other people, and I want to be like that too. So that really, 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 really meant a lot to me. Just a second. So then I came up with a person that he was saying, you have to talk to someone at least a week. Absolutely. You can't go back and not have someone to talk to at least once a week about all of this to keep going. And because he really cares and doesn't want me to, like, the way I would put it is be a total wreck. is not what God has for me. Can you go to the next slide? I don't remember when I read this. I think it must have been when I was there. Rejoice always, pray constantly, and everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Messiah Yeshua. Do not quench the spirit, do not despise prophetic messages, but test all things, hold fast to what is good, keep away from every kind of evil. Now may the God of peace himself make you completely holy, and may your whole spirit and soul and body be kept complete, blameless at the coming of our Lord Yeshua the Messiah. Faithful is the one who calls you, and he will make it happen. So that's my prayer for all of us, but also the part that I put in bold. I was thinking about this, all these scriptures about giving thanks, always praising God, and coming like a list, like, okay, I have to do this, I have to do that. And I was like, no, rejoice always, and everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Messiah Yeshua. God wants us to be happy. It's not about, like, oh, you have to say thank you. It's not like rules of etiquette. I mean, etiquette is good, but it's not just that. So, like, the way I want the kids in my group to be happy, God wants us to be happy and enjoy things and even have fun and occasionally have awkward situations, apparently. So it's like, it's not like, oh, this is God's will. You have to say thank you. There's a lot of science, by the way, behind gratitude and saying thank you, making you happier. So, like, hello. I don't know if there's another one. I don't remember how many slides I had. Okay, I guess that's basically the end. But yeah, I had a really good time. I still have struggle. Oh, wait. Okay, so what happened after that is the kids watched I Can Only Imagine in Russian dubbed, but I'd already seen it and I knew what was happening. And I was sitting there starting to feel heavier and heavier and heavier with, like, probably the most terrible thing that has recurred in my life is the thought that life is meaningless. And I was like, seriously? Like, after yesterday, after getting through that, after working on all these things and seeing the value in those things, it's like, I value all those things, but then all of a sudden there's this catch-all that's like, no, none of this matters. And I was like, okay, this is really not good. And I went up to Roma at the next dinner and I told him, okay, so I just got hit with something else. And he was like, really? And then he said, like, but you know all this other stuff, and, like, isn't that kind of insulting to God? And I asked him to pray for me, and he did. And I was like, I'm going to keep doing all this other stuff, but, like, I'm not going to do this on my own. And he wasn't, like, judging me or really chastising me. It was just, like, the kind of guidance that I have to give the kids in my group. Like, okay, take a second, go away. Like, you're too upset about this, that kind of thing. So I didn't take it badly at all, and he didn't mean it badly, but I needed to hear it. That's why I went to talk to someone. I needed to hear the truth from someone else. And it's still painful, and I still deal with it, but I have those other things. I have Philippians 4, I have John 3, I have the fact that people here and across the ocean really care about me and want updates from me and are my family, in another sense. And it's not like, yeah, there are negative things and there are those voices, and our job is to put on the armor of God, which he was also telling me about, Roma. He's like, people go out all the time. They don't even put on the armor that they have. And then they're like, I keep getting hurt. I was like, why don't you try, you know, putting on the armor? I don't have that passage. Maybe people can read it later. So that helps. And the thing is, like, if there's something you're not sure about, Don't focus on truths you're not sure about. Focus on truths you are sure about, and then pursue seeking out the truths you aren't sure about. But the things that you are sure about, you're sure about. And that's really cool, because not being sure about things is not very cool. And, like, I think the world is beautiful. I don't think the world came into being all by itself. Therefore, I think God created the world. I don't think that any of the other gods people worship are God. I don't think there's no God. Therefore, I think there is God, and he is the Lord of the world. And I have had experiences, and I do want more of that. And maybe I can't see it, but there's no judgment for seeking it. So talk with God, read the word, listen. It won't hurt, but it will likely help. You might not know exactly how it will help, but seriously, it won't hurt. So try it and then stick to it. And he's saying, you know, for me, I need to stick to certain things for, like, you know, 4 to 6 months and try to get out of, like, whatever state of kind of brokenness I've been in. Be glad that you are a wonderful, inspiring, lovable, and loved creation of God. He enjoys spending time with you, and he already knows you are imperfect. And then the third one, which also Shmuel touched on, and something I realized when I was in Russia, because there was a time when I didn't get enough sleep, and the next day I got hit with a whole ton of depressing thoughts. Sleep! Sleep so that your mind and body function well and you can enjoy life more. This one's actually turning out harder for me than the, like, actually, you know, spend time with God once or twice a day separately. So, you know, maybe we can kind of hold each other accountable for that one more than we have. That might be good. But really, sleep, it's not pointless. Sleep is actually really meaningful. Life is meaningful, and sleep is part of life. So thank you for everything. And I am glad to be home. It was hard coming back, especially the first time from Russia, and then being here for 3 weeks, and things were not the normal schedule and stuff. But then coming back from Belarus, I was like, I'm coming home. I am. I'm actually sure this time that I am. So thanks for being here and loving me, and I love you all.